This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We do more varieties and flavors of cheese than anywhere else on Earth. By pushing the boundaries of what cheese can and should be, find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's Cider Week here in all of New York State, and it's Tuesday, October 5th, 2021. We've got quite the Cider Week show here. We've got a couple retailers as well as cider makers. We're going to go around the room and do a brief introduction of everyone. So let's start with Steve.
Hello, my name is Steve Seelen, and I'm the owner, orchardist, and cider maker at South Hill Cider in Ithaca, New York.
That's great. And Paige?
Hey, it's Paige coming to you from Fishkill, New York, up in the Hudson Valley, and I own Boutique Wine, Spirits, and Ciders, and we're a bottle shop.
All right. Carl?
Carl Duhoffman, a founder and one of the cider makers and pomo makers at Orchard Hill Cider Mill in the Hudson Valley.
Great. And Mike?
Hey folks, I'm Mike Reese. I'm one of the owners of Redfield Cider Bar and Bottle Shop out in California. And yeah, just waking up.
All right. Well, let's start with Paige. This is quite a show. Paige, the other day you came down to our Cider Feast NYC in Brooklyn. How is Cider Week for you? You're in Fishkill. You're one of the top bottle retailers in the state. Are you doing anything different for Cider Week?
Yeah, we're actually doing a couple of in-store events this week, and we're kicking it off on this Saturday, which is the 9th. So we're doing a 1 to 5, and we're going to have a ton of New York State ciders open for tasting. So we'll have about 30, plus our tap system of 13 is always rolling.
That's great. And then, Carl, for you, you also sent down some product to Cider Feast, but you had something going on up at your cidery, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a very busy time of year. At the Orchard, we have enormous agritourism sort of onslaught happening with people coming to visit the cidery and also to pick apples and other activities at the Orchard that our home orchard is Soon's Orchard. So for people who don't know, we are partners with Jeff Soons, who's the orchardist, but they're two separate kind of institutions. And so there's a lot of activities at the Orchard going on right now, and we're getting a ton of visitors. So we're very, very, it's a very exciting time of year every year.
Great. And hey, Steve, you're kind of the guy who called the show. Just give us your take on Cider Week at South Hill and, what we're going to talk about, regional ciders.
Yeah, we're like Carl, we're pretty busy because we're located on an orchard. Everybody loves visiting orchards in the fall. And we have various events for Cider Week. And so that's bringing people here. We have some, we have a tasting that's happening this Thursday. A bunch of the local cider makers are coming to taste their stuff, kind of set up farmers market style, and I'm looking forward to it because we're so busy with our own orchards and cideries and businesses, we don't really get together a whole lot. So it'll be a time where a lot of us cider makers can hang out and try each other's ciders. That's happening this Thursday. Doing an orchard tour on Saturday, and yeah, it's a busy time of year. We're out picking apples today. I'm actually sitting in my car outside someone's house to use their Wi-Fi because there's about 100 wild apple trees on her property, and she's kind enough to let me use her Wi-Fi for this on my lunch break.
That's so romantic, man. It's beautiful. So, Steve, you wanted to talk about regional ciders and regional differences and things. Let's start the conversation because I know you also invited Mike Rice from Redfield Cider out in Oakland, California.
Well, yeah, I just kind of threw it out there, Jimmy. I don't know. you know, I was invited to you know, be on the show here, and that's something that's been on my mind throughout there was just regional styles, is what regional styles are developing. So that's just a question that I have, and so I thought Mike would be a good person to ask that question to, because I know he sells ciders from all over the country. He's got a lot of a lot of experience tasting ciders from all over the world, all over the country, and he brought my cider. In fact, when people ask me where my cider is available, I jokingly say it's available from coast to coast, because Mike got me out there in the Bay Area, and I'm in New York, and so I've got some cider out in New York City. So I know he's got some ciders from New York. I see Eve's pop up on his shelf. We're usually there. So yeah, he's got, and I know Paige sells ciders from all over the place. So yeah, I just wanted to pose the question of what regional styles do people see developing in the cider world?
Great. So let's start with Mike. Again, a general conversation, and we'll ask a lot of questions.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of really exciting stuff happening, not just in the US, but throughout the world. We've been getting all kinds of stuff in the shop, not just like, you know, some of the European classic stuffs from France and the UK, but we've also been getting, you know, some exciting new ciders from producers in Denmark. They're influenced by like the natural wine scene over there. And then, yeah, within the US, I think California's got a few different distinctive things going on. I guess can kind of give a quick overview of what I think has been happening there, which has been pretty exciting over the last year or so. I feel like there's always been, you know, kind of these modern flavored ciders built on a base, often of California apples with flavoring added of some kind, whether it's other fruits or spices or whatever. There's also, you know, been folks like Tilted Shed or Tanuki that are focusing on finding interesting heirloom or cider specific apple varieties and presenting them in a manner that's highlighting the quality of the fruit and possibly a natural fermentation. And then, you know, over the last like year or two, especially, we've seen a lot more folks coming to cider from wine, especially natural wine, both as a response to kind of a surge in interest in cider, but also as a way to kind of help diversify what they're making, given that fire pressure has been a really big influence on California wine. So there's pretty exciting stuff happening in California right now. And yeah, I think, you know, you see a little bit of that coming out of ciders from Oregon, Washington, and their intersection with the wine world. But, yeah, like Steve said, we got stuff from all over. So
yeah,
I'm not going to try to summarize all of American cider, but that's what's happening in our neck of woods at least.
Well, Mike, how about this? Like, you know, when you go into if your store is a wine store or a bar, you're going to have a wine list. If it's a retail store, there's going to be sections. How do you, categorize your ciders for the customers?
Yeah, we do it regionally, which is a little tough if you're counting on the customer to kind of like guide themselves through the process. So we have everything kind of organized by region, and actually like literally how it's on the shelf looks kind of like a map of the United States. You know, you got Washington up in the top left of the shelf and New York in the top right. I don't think that would work in like a grocery store necessarily if you're trying to give the customer the tools to find something that suits their own taste. But we do everything in a very like hands-on manner. You know, if someone walks in the store, we come up and say like, hey, what kind of stuff are you looking for? Like, let me help you find it. So yeah, we stick to regional in terms of how it's presented on the show.
Yeah. But if let's say that someone was going to create more regional designations down the road, I mean, wouldn't you have to consider, are we just talking about the apples and where they're sourced? Are we talking about the process of making? Are we talking about sour? Are we talking about hopped? You know, are we talking about added fruits? It gets really complicated. You know, I just from doing the cider events I've been doing, and I want Paige to weigh in too, it's that everyone has a totally different expectation of what cider is. And I think that's kind of exciting. I mean, I find that people are willing to try everything. And sometimes you want that mix, right? It's like sometimes you want a super dry cedra and then you want something more fruity.
Yeah, I think for us, you know, it comes down to just educating as much as we can. I think, like, if you can imagine if you can imagine a world in which, like, nobody knew what any different beer style was, it's a similar challenge where it's like someone comes in and says, like, hey, I want a beer. And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, like, we got a big range of beers here. And you hand them a stout and they decide that they don't like beer. Then that's kind of like a real failure at helping someone develop their own tastes. So, yeah, I mean, I think to the extent that we as retailers can hold people's hands and introduce them to what makes each thing different, or just introduce the idea that there are variables that can make cider taste different from each other, I think that goes a long way in helping people feel like they can establish their own taste within the world of cider.
Yeah, so it's like, I'm going to walk into Paige's place, and I want a hard cider. Paige, I want to taste some hard ciders. How have you? You've done a great job educating people and tasting people. How do you represent the wide range of ciders?
I think, to Mike's point, education is key. It's very, very important as a retailer, and it's something that we spend a lot of time working on. But yeah, we introduce cider as a category and not as a flavor. And I think that's what confuses a ton of people. I think people have an idea of what the flavor of cider is going to be and don't understand that it is an entire category, not unlike wine or beer or anything else. And that they have to understand and kind of go through and understand what the differences are from the fruited type of thing to the sour type of category to a farmhouse type of category to a French style. There are lots of different styles within the category. So what we do here is we bring people right over to our taps. We have 13 here in our store. We start to taste them through, and we almost always start with Carl's product, which is Orchard Hill Verde, because it's a nice medium style cider. And I can kind of use that as a litmus test for a customer to find out if they want something sweeter or drier. And almost everybody, I would say about 90% to 95% of the customers that try Orchard Hill's Verde cider likes it. And then I ask them, do they want a little sweeter or a little drier? And then we kind of go from there. And then I can start to categorize that customer and start to understand what their flavor profile is. If that is not an option, a couple of questions like, what's the last type of wine that you've enjoyed? Or how do you take your coffee? Those types of questions actually will help me ascertain from a customer where their flavor profile is. And then I can start to recommend ciders from there as well. But what Mike said is very, very true. It's the education part of it. And then also, once the customers have tried ciders, and we are so lucky because we're in the Hudson Valley and we have so many great cideries right around us, sending those customers to the cidery to go walk the orchard, to go see what the apples look like, to understand that the apples that they're seeing on the trees that are often used in ciders are not necessarily the same that they would see in the supermarket, and to start to understand the process of what goes into that cider. That is something we like to do, is to send the customers and our guests out to the cideries that are local to us, or send them up to the Finger Lakes to go see some of the cideries up there. It's a great weekend trip.
Oh, that's
from
great.
Us anyway.
And then Carl, you're really a great salesperson. How do you represent your Orchard Hill, and what's the variety? Because I mean, just by having Pommeau, it's like that's a whole nother style as well.
Yeah, I mean, the market is a bit of a challenging landscape right now. Our line has a bit of variety. We started with the champagne method ciders using, dessert fruit, and have now our bitters and our crab apples have come in. And so we have a good quantity of cider specific high tannin fruits and high acid fruits to play with. And the market more and more is being dominated by sort of, by canned as a packaging demand, and which you know, so we have some canned ciders, and those are selling well and getting us better distribution. But, you know, it's a little bit heartbreaking because we are really all about the bottled ciders and the more, you know, the more sophisticated ciders that we really love and got into the business to make, along with the Pommeau. So it's a bit of a challenge because as far as wholesale distribution goes and getting represented in the market to get out there and proselytize for fine cider as opposed to just sort of canned cider, and you know, and then putting good cider in cans and hoping that the cans hold up and all those issues that we've been dealing with in the marketplace. And then the Pommeau is almost it's like a whole nother beast because no one really knows what it is. It's not obviously it's not bubbly, and so it's like almost a different customer sometimes, because you might be talking to the bartender instead of the sommelier, or you might be talking to just a different buyer in general. And again, comes down to education across the whole category because of the confusion in the marketplace about people constantly say, oh, are you where's your brewery? You know, where's your brewery? Well, we don't brew anything. There's no brewing going on. And so there's just every step of the way of talking to people about the cider and about the Pommeau. It's a lot of handholding to kind of walk people through what we're about, which is, you know, taking apples grown, estate grown fruit that's specifically, from one place, and trying to make ciders that express that and honor the fruit as opposed to sort of using it as a neutral backdrop in the way that a lot of people have experienced cider in the macro world.
I will say how much I love Pommeau as a style. I mean, years ago, I would finish after any night of working. I would have a little Pommeau for my guests just as a way to end the night without having to go too hard. What is your Pommeau, yeah, Carl? Just for some of our listeners who may not know what Pommeau is. I think it's one of the greatest cider-based drinks that you can get.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I discovered Pommeau in my travels and had really fallen in love with how delicious it is. And when I was in Normandy visiting Calvados distilleries, you know, the Pommeau was sort of the orphan stepchild of the French world of beverages. And I'm just like, I just couldn't believe that something that's so delicious and approachable and really has such universal appeal was kind of, you know, just kind of poo-pooed as like and also their type product. But so our product is called 1066. We named it for the year of the Norman invasion. And initially we didn't bottle it. We didn't put the word Pommeau on the bottle, hoping to honor the DO of the French DO. We were one of the first producers in the United States to make one commercially. And, we distilled the brandy at a local distillery using from our cider. We aged them in some used French oak barrels. And then we blend it down, re-age it again, and we do different blends and sometimes single barrel releases. And we don't dilute, so the ABV sometimes is variable depending on the barrels. But we generally shoot for, you know, somewhere around 18 to 20%, which is a little higher than the diluted French Pommeau, where they often bring it down to 17. It's within the range of the definition of the category. So it's really very traditional. I think if you get a small producer Pommeau that's, you know, straight from the barrel, the big difference will be that we don't use the high tannin fruits in any of the Pommeau to date. So our Pommeau is a little softer, a little less tannic structure, a little fruity, but we have ages, you know, the minimum age is 3 years in the barrel before it gets into the blend. And we have Pomot now that are up to, you know, 9-10 years in the barrel. So we spend a lot of time and care to blend the batches so we get, you know, characteristic differences between the bottlings, but also, you know, enough depth in each and enough fruitiness in each to really be wonderfully balanced. So
yeah, and I'll say for anyone who has like a beer bar or a wine bar with just wine and beer license in New York, highly recommend you add a Pomot as something for the last drink of the night, because when you don't have liquor, sometimes you have to be more creative. And I found that I'm very happy with Pomot at the end of the night. Steve, just give us a little overview of what you've been doing. And I mean, it's been a few years since we talked. Last time you helped us do a show about still ciders, which then seemed radical.
Wow. There's a lot that's been going on since we last talked. We opened a tasting room the fall before the pandemic started, so the fall of 2019. We finally took the plunge and built a cidery with tasting room right at the orchard. Yeah, so we just did that. I've been making cider since 2002, and we opened the commercial cidery in 2013, but it took a few years to get enough years under our belt to feel comfortable jumping in and building a building right at the orchard for a cidery and a tasting room. So we finally did that in 2019. And ever since then, we've been hosting a lot of people. During the pandemic, it's been an honor to be able to host people and give them a place to hang out and really enjoy cider, introducing a lot of people to cider. Because I'd say more than half of the people that come to our tasting room are coming just to hang out with people and have something to eat and drink, and not specifically seeking out ciders. So we take that opportunity to introduce people to decent ciders. I would tie that into the still cider discussion that you brought up. You know, we talked about that a few years ago, and that's one of my sort of pet projects, is always to try and make still ciders that speak to people and not just to cider nerds or other cider makers. And we finally, now that we have a tasting room, it's easier to see people's reactions to our product. And we do have a cider, it's called Goldwyn, which is a blend of Golden Russet and Baldwin. So doesn't even have any of the, you know, what people think of as the hardcore cider apples, you know, the real tannic European based cider apples. It's based more on the North American cider apples, Golden Russet and Baldwin. But we're making it in a style that is more like a really, you know, higher acid, high tension. It's also higher alcohol. It's naturally about 10.5% alcohol, because Golden Russets and Baldwin have a lot of bricks. So still ciders still excite me, even though I've been making them for many years. And now we're in the middle of harvest. And so it's October, which is the most exciting month, I find, when harvesting apples. There are plenty of apples right in September, and some of them are great. But now we're really getting into the heart of the season, where I think the best tasting apples are in October. We pressed about half of our Kingston Black the other day. So it's an exciting year. At our estate orchard, we already pressed over a half ton of Kingston Blacks, and that's not even half the crop yet. And we only planted those trees in 2015. So it's exciting to finally have a crop coming from there. We did our first commercial vintage from our home orchard in 2017. But this year it's really coming into its own. Well, we'll have a bunch of estate ciders, and it's pretty exciting.
Well, that's great. Hey, I'm gonna go back to Mike. Mike, you know, let's say I don't know if you're doing the buying at Redfield. You know, what are some questions that you'd be asking these cider makers if you're considering taking in their ciders?
Yeah, you know, I like to get a sense of where producers are coming from philosophically. You know, it's a relatively, you know, considering I came from beer, it's a relatively small world. You know, there's only a few hundred producers that I have access to bring into the shop, which sounds like a lot, but it's really not. So I feel like I've gotten a little bit of a rhythm in terms of like who I'm working with and what kind of styles we're working with, but certainly like to know where their fruit is coming from first and foremost, and like how they approach either apple selection or if they're growing apples, you know, what they're deciding to grow and where. I think like if there's a producer that's using bulk juice from Washington and you know, some kind of fruit puree to flavor it, I prefer that there's like an element of further depth, whether it's just, you know, a local producer, it's keeping the money in the economy, or if it's just, you know, some people that are doing great work for their community or doing charity work or something. I like some other element to there rather than just, okay, here's another producer, making another flavored cider. And yeah, we do require everybody be able to talk to us about fruit sourcing and their approach to like why they're doing the things they're doing. We also have a big, I'll use my PG rated language, but we have a no jerks rule. So if, you know, there's some producers out there that, that have acted kind of inappropriately in some way, they're not in the shop. That's it. So, we have a few different approaches to the characteristics that we look for from a producer, but it really is the whole thing top to bottom, from, you know, not being a jerk to the agricultural element and their fermentation style.
What's the cider right now that you're excited about?
Oh man, we just, as many listeners may know, the great Shelton Brothers Importing went out of business this year, which was, I was genuinely very sad about that. I think
yeah,
this
that's,
is
that's
a
tragic, bro. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a company that, you know, brought in a lot of the beers that were formative in my drinking experiences and really a lot of great ciders from the folks at Oliver's and Peckham's and, really just kind of like an incredible selection, and they went out of business. So we haven't been able to access some of those products in a while. And, our pals at Ancho Cider in DC have done a little bit of importing. So this week we were able to get a drop of like six new Herefordshire ciders from Oliver's and Ross-on-Wye and Little Pomona. So I've been extremely excited to have those in the shop and drinking them at every opportunity.
Well, that's great. What about for you, Paige? What's exciting right now in your store?
Yeah, I don't know. There's 300 of them in here. It's kind of hard to choose. I'm just saying.
Well, what's on the cider tree this week?
Well, actually, we literally just tasted this morning, and we're bringing in some Black Diamond cider from the Finger Lakes, so from up in Steve's area. And pretty excited about that because Ian Merwin is just really a great guy that sort of knows this category super, super well, kind of gets a little geeked out. So he's got a lot of information. I love his transparency on his label. And I'm super excited about the Somerset Jersey style that they have, which is kind of a reboot of a more of a dormant apple called Harry Masters Jersey. And it's really nice because it's got a little bit of soft tannin on the back, and kind of just gives it a little like texture and grip to it. Kind of reminds me a little bit of an English style cider in that regard. And I think it's going to go great with some of the fall flavors coming in, including like dark meat turkey and some gamey stuff. So I'm super psyched about this. And we'll be tasting that out on Saturday during our cider event.
That's great. Hey, we're going to take a short break, and I'm going to start thinking about turkey pairings when I come back on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin, the state of cheese, makes half of the nation's specialty cheese and wins more awards than any other state or country. Our heritage and traditions Master Cheesemaker Program, and the American propensity for innovation all put Wisconsin on the cutting wedge of cheesemaking. With over 600 varieties of cheese to choose from and 5,500 national and international awards and counting, get ready to turn your refrigerator into a trophy case. Enjoying a Wisconsin cheese is basically like winning a gold medal in culinary achievement. Set your mind at cheese. When you bite into a wedge of Wisconsin Wonderful, you know it is made with the ultimate skill and passion possible. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Become a member and support us at heritageradionetwork.org. So it's our Cider Week special episode. Steve Sellin, man, thanks for help organize the show. You know, we were talking about regional styles a little bit. It makes me think about the American Cider Book by Dan and Mr. Cavallo. Do you feel like that book is really influential or going to be influential for consumers and cider buyers?
Oh, yeah, for sure, because if someone's interested in cider, yeah, it's a roadmap. Roadmap just showing what's going on around the country. It's too bad neither of them could have been on the show.
Yeah, we had them on a few times in the spring, but I was just thinking about, like, one show I did with them, we talked about Southeastern ciders, and we went to James Creek Cider House. And he was talking about ciders in, like, where Arizona or New Mexico meets Colorado and all these regions I had never thought of. Do you guys think that the different apples that are growing in those regions are going to become a cider style? Or is it really more about the producer's labels are going to become, like, culty or sought after? And anyone can answer that because it's such a big world. Like Mike mentioned, Oliver Cider. Whenever I hear Oliver Cider from England, Herefordshire, I want that. You know, are there going to be other ciders like that kind of define a region?
I would say yes. I mean, I have people coming in asking for very specific ciders that are kind of more culty. So, for example, Aaron Burr Cider, we have a lot of, and Andy just came out with a book as well. Like, so we have people reading those books and coming in and actually asking about the ciders because they read a book, a cider book. So I think that you're going to see a lot of people coming in because of this influence from Dan Pucci's book and also the other ones that have just hit the market.
Yeah, Mike?
Yeah, I was going to say that I feel like, I agree with Paige there for sure, especially with regard to people kind of latching on to certain producers and, like, really kind of, like, vibing with what they're bringing to the table in terms of, like, their approach, their fruit sourcing, et cetera. But I just feel like cider kind of exists in a space where regional styles are never going to be the primary way that people think of it. I think we have, you know, some folks that have kind of, like, thought about cider from that perspective when they've traveled to Normandy and tried, Cidre Boucher Brut, or whether they've gone to San Sebastian and drunk a bunch of Basque cider. But then they come to the U.S. and the cider world here is so varied. There aren't rules. There aren't, like, controlled appellations dictating how people are making their cider. So I feel like, because it's just such a wild world, I feel like it occupies this space between a beer maker's approach to beer making, where they have kind of commoditized ingredients that they can form the way that they want to, and winemaker's approach, where they're kind of expressing terroir as their goal. Cider kind of exists in this middle world where there isn't rules. You know, people can add in other ingredients to kind of, like, conjure up something that they've conceived in their brain, or they can take apples straight off the tree, mash them up, and just let them ferment into something on its own. So I think regional styles are limited to the extent that cider makers are not limited. So people latching on to producers that they find really compelling, I think, is the route to people establishing their taste?
I think there, I hope there's room for both. I think that, you know, if you look at Steve and his cohort of Finger Lake cider makers, I think they've done a very good job at, you know, establishing a critical mass of producers who share philosophy, share a terroir, a region. And I think over time, I know the New York Cider Association is very interested in helping to promote, you know, not a dictated style per se, like a Norman style or an Asturias like Sidra Nature, but I think maybe doing, you know, establishing a some sense of sort of a opt-in kind of style that can help define the regionality. I think from my perspective, you know, the problems that we see with British cider and with Spanish cider of not not establishing a regional identity enough is that or a premium identity is that, you know, commodity fruit is great, but we need a sustainable model that can support growers and producers and, you know, a product at the end of the chain that is, you know, sellable at a price that can sustain that whole industry up and down. And I'm not sure that a model that kind of talks about, you know, just using it as a backdrop is sustainable in the long term for that kind of chain. You know, beer, you know, uses breakfast cereals that are, you know, very easy to obtain. You know, growing apples and growing quality apples is a much more labor and time intensive undertaking. And so I feel that in the long run, I hope that there's room for an identity that supports that industry in a sustainable way. And I'm very suspicious that the, you know, the beer model for cider can do that in a way that's long term.
Yeah. Anyone else want to jump in on that? No. All right. I was thinking more about just one thing about New York State is it seems that the last 10 years of like this cider revolution, that many of the longtime family, you know, 4, 5, 6 generation apple growing farms have gotten into the hard cider game. And whether it's like Carl, you guys are partnered with Soon's Orchards. It seems like that's a strength of New York. Is that something that New York State is really ahead of than other states just because of the amount of cider trees and apple trees?
I can't speak to the other states because I don't really have experience, but I think it is a strength for us in the sense that, you know, I think New York State is very, you know, uniquely positioned in the sense that we have a lot of growers and we have a lot of high quality growers and it's a lot of family owned. They're not big, you know, they're not all big corporate growers. And I don't know if that's similar or different to say Washington per se, but I feel like, yeah, I think New York is blessed with a couple really distinct regions. Between the Hudson Valley and the Finger Lake regions where you have, you know, a very, very distinctive growing environment. And so I think we're poised with a legacy of family growers who have that we can build on, you know, and I think it is a particular strength.
I was just going to say that as a Californian operating in the Californian cider scene, I'm really envious of what you folks have going in New York, especially with regard to like what Paige was saying about how you can just send interested buyers to, you know, an orchard that may have a tasting room. And like we went to so many beautiful orchards with great tasting rooms and these really like customer friendly environments when we were out in New York a couple of years ago. And that's not really something I'm able to do as a retailer. There aren't very many producers at all that have kind of like customer facing orchard site tasting rooms out here. So I think that's a really powerful tool that I'm super jealous of.
Well, come to New York.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to go back to Steve. Steve, can you just walk us through like what your line is and the different ciders you have? Because I see you keep growing in a wonderful way.
Yes. How do I guess the way I categorize them often is that we have some ciders that are single orchard ciders, and like our home orchard is one of them. It's called Full Bloom Orchard. And then we also have several other orchards that we have taken on, and we prune them and we harvest them, but we don't even spray them. So, you know, when I say manage, it's very loosely managed. That's like the Stone Fence Farm Orchard, the one of a kind orchard. We have another one we're harvesting right now that has about a dozen really old Northern Spine greening trees on it, like 100-year-old trees. But then the landowner 20 years ago planted some Roxbury Russet, Asopus Spitzenberg, Golden Russet, Bramley Seedling, you know, some really interesting heirlooms. So we're going to do a single orchard cider from that one. So there's one line. Those are the single orchard ciders. And then we do a bunch of single varietal ciders. And those range from really bright, bubbly ciders like Baldwin, which is more of a cava or champagne structure to it. You know, it's all bubbles and acid. To some Harry Masters Jersey and Chisel Jersey. Those are single varietal bittersweet apples. And those apples, for the most part, we're buying in some from the north end of the Finger Lakes up closer to Geneva. There's some Baldwins and Golden Russets there. And then there's some bittersweets. One of the things that's allowed me to do a lot of experimentation and kind of push the envelope on even cider styles is the fact that when I planted my orchard, I also I traveled around and talked to tons of apple growers to try and find someone that would plant bittersweet cider apples for me. And about a dozen old guys all said no. And they were like, you want me to plant bitter apples and you're the only person that's going to buy them? Like, yeah, I've seen a lot of fads come and go. I'm not into it. I mean, I heard that same thing a dozen times. But then I found one guy who is, you know, closer to my age, had worked in England and had seen cider orchards and decided, he's like, yeah, I'll plant some. So he planted some for me, and that's up in Walcott, about 15 miles north of Geneva. And so I have a lot of bittersweet apples coming from there that I'm experimenting with. So that's where I'm able to do some, you know, 100% bittersweet, wild fermented, more almost like Brittany style ciders. My string theory is one of those. The single varietal bittersweets are often made from that fruit. And then the other ones, so I've got single orchard ciders, I've got the single variety ciders, and then the blends are the other category. And the way I look at those is the way you look at, you know, certain wines are always a blend. Like you always know that, you know, a Bordeaux is going to be a blend of certain varieties. It's not a random blend. It's a very intentional blend. And that's like my, the Golden Russet, Baldwin still cider I was talking about is a blend. My Patina is always a blend, but a very intentional blend of bittersweets that are barrel aged along with some higher acid heirlooms, Champagne Method bone dry. All of our sparkling ciders in the bottle are naturally sparkling. That's something that that sort of defines South Hill. The ciders are either still or they're naturally sparkling in the bottle. We do some carbonation on kegs. That's the only carbonation that we do. That's how I categorize them. Single orchard ciders, they're single variety ciders, and then there are the blends, which are, you know, intentionally blended for certain balance and character. I guess the pack basket is the one that doesn't fit into there. That's the one that's made all from wild apples, like wild seedling apples. So in a sense, it falls into the single orchard cider in a way, but not really, because they come from all over. But it's, you know, hard to define those because every single tree is a different variety. So, you know, one bottle could have 80 varieties in it or more, because every tree we harvest has a half bushel to five bushels of apples on it.
Yeah. I remember back in, I think I got a couple of cases of your 2015 pack basket, and I did have a few bottles for a few years. Are all your ciders meant to be like, you know, not age worthy, but definitely laid down for a year or two? Will they get better?
Yeah, it's not so much that they're meant to be age worthy. My Palm Sur Lee was the one where that was sort of a goal. I wanted to make a cider that would probably be better in 5 or 10 years or more. And that one definitely hit the mark. But for the most part, I think they're age worthy because they have significant structure. They have acid and tannins in higher levels than average. And so that's what makes any, I think, wine or cider something where it will develop more age, or more complexity with age, you know, almost get a patina on it where it doesn't just deteriorate when it's in the bottle. So most of our ciders, yeah, I'd say they're better after they're in the bottle for at least 6 months, if not a year or a year and a half.
Yeah, Steve, I'm so proud of you, and I can't wait to one day, hopefully by next year, I'll come up and visit your tasting room. Does anyone else, let's have one or two questions for anybody, because we're going to wrap this up. I know Paige has a question. Go for it, Mike.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I unfortunately have to drop off, but I wanted to thank you all for including me and echo Jimmy's sentiments that Steve's ciders are ridiculously amazing. So get those.
Mike, throw out a question before you go.
Oh, man. All right. I'd say let's have everybody describe New York cider and what we think the regional style of New York cider is in three words.
Good one. Paige.
Come on. Okay. delicious. Varied. And must try.
Sneaking in a hyphenated word in there is a little bit cheating, but I'll let it go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You let that slide. Thanks.
Steve.
Oh, boy. Wow. Well, they've got potential. I guess I put potential one word. Heirlooms. Got tons of heirlooms to work with. And I'd say it's real. Whatever the word real means in the beverage world.
Love it.
Carl?
Yeah, to me, I feel like the New York ciders that I consider New York ciders are fruit and orchard based, are real ciders that are, you know, process and fruit identified. And I think I agree with Steve that we have apples that are unique to New York that help define who we are historically and continue to play an important role in our cider making today.
Wow.
That's not, not three words, but it's similar.
My three words, I'm going to steal what Steve said. Oh, boy, wow. Okay. I can't play those games. But, Mike, you got to take off, but I wanted to say a few more words with everybody. So thanks so much, Mike.
Yeah, thanks
for joining us.
Talk to everybody later.
Yeah, and Paige, anything else? Your cider event is on Saturday. So basically, you're a retail store. So basically, you taste – do you have other reps tasting or people – how does your format work?
Yeah, so when we have events, so we have one coming up this Saturday. When we have events, we have some retailers coming and showing some ciders, and we always – roll our 13 taps of cider, which happen, you know, any time of any day. So anytime you come into our store, you know, a staff member can taste you on a couple of ciders, you know, right off of our tap system. And they're predominantly New York or East Coast based, but we do have some West Coast cider on there as well. Don't have anything outside of the U.S., though, right now running on tap, but There's tons and tons of options and different flavor profiles. So, and then we have another event coming up next Saturday, the 16th, and that's going to be with Aaron Burstiders. So we'll have them out for tasting and coinciding with Rye Week.
Well, that's great. Rye whiskeys. Well, you guys, thanks for joining me. Steve, you want to say anything else to wrap up the show, or are we good?
Yeah, it's been great being out with you, Jimmy. Come visit.
Yeah, man, looking forward to it. And I said, you're both between Carl and Steve right there. I could spend years just drinking your ciders and Pomo.
Yes,
so thanks so much.
There.
Yeah, right? So
yeah,
thanks
absolutely.
To Steve, Paige, Carl, and Mike for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our engineer, Armin Spengen. I'm Jimmy Carboni. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.